This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Well, 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 if it isn't the bridge we said we'd cross when we got there. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. When Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank failed, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation covered people's deposits, insured and uninsured. That wasn't free. It cost the FDIC nearly $23 billion. The agency is required by law and by math to recoup that money. So where's it gonna come from? Who's gonna pay? Marketplace's Nova Sappho has that.
Banks buy into insurance protection from the FDIC, which is why the agency's fund had $128 billion in it. It's down by about $20 billion to deal with the mess at Silicon Valley Bank and another $2.5 billion to deal with Signature Bank's failure. The FDIC board plans to vote on a special assessment in May to recoup those losses. At a House hearing yesterday, the chair of the FDIC, Martin Grunberg, said his agency will consider bank size when determining which banks pay how much.
The FDIC does have discretion. And let me just say, without forecasting what our board is going to vote, we're going to be keenly sensitive to the impact on community banks.
Meaning big banks may end up paying a larger portion of the special assessment. Banks of all sizes are likely to pass on assessment costs to their customers in the form of slightly higher interest rates on loans or slightly worse returns on savings. I'm Nova Sappho for Marketplace.
Another train has derailed, this time in Raymond, Minnesota. It was carrying corn syrup and flammable ethanol, among other things. Happened about 1 a.m. this morning local time. Several cars caught fire. No injuries reported. Homes around the site are being evacuated. We'll keep you posted. Taiwanese President Tsai Ing-wen is expected to meet with America's third most senior politician next week. That would be House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. China calls that a provocation. From Beijing, here's the BBC's Stephen McDonnell.
Chinese government views any high-level meetings with Taiwan's leader as de facto recognition that the self-governing island is independent. So it's warned that if Tsai Ing-wen meets U.S. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, as is expected, this will represent a provocation warranting retaliation. When former U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi visited Taiwan, the People's Liberation Army responded with military exercises around the island.
That was the BBC's Stephen McDonnell. Earlier this month, French President Emmanuel Macron followed through on his promise to reform the country's pension system, raising the retirement age from 62 to 64. How he did it hit a nerve. He forced the legislation through without a vote in the lower house of parliament. Since then, over a million people have taken to the streets across France. There have been strikes. Social media has been filled with images of garbage piling on the streets of Paris and large groups of people clashing with the police. Macron's government has said the reforms are needed to address the increasingly high cost of the pension system there as the population ages. Protesters say the president has gone too far and is defying the will of the people. Sophie Petter is the Economist magazine's Paris bureau chief. She's been on the ground covering the protests and joins us to talk about it. Sophie, good morning.
Good morning to you.
So you've been reporting on the ground. What's the situation like in Paris right now?
Well, I was out there on Tuesday when there was the 10th of these one-day national strikes that have been going on since January. And, you know, it's a mix. There's a sort of festive mood because a lot of people are out there protesting, but there's a lot of anger. And then at the end of the day, what tends to happen is that these things turn violent, and that's when it gets pretty nasty. It's a strange mix, but I would say that the overall mood is tense still, and there's a lot of anger at the French president.
Well, just how bad are French finances that the president says he needed to raise the retirement age to cover pensions?
Well, I think there are two things. I mean, one of them is the sort of sustainability in the long term of the French pension system. France does spend more than, you know, most of its neighbours as a percentage of GDP on public pensions. And yet it has an ageing population. At some point, something has to give. There are 4 million more pensioners now than there were 15 years ago. So I think that it's about making that system sustainable, short of bringing down pensions or putting up taxes, which President Macron really doesn't want to do and has ruled out. It means asking people to work a little bit longer, 2 more years, is probably the soundest way of responding to this kind of a problem.
What is it about this that incenses the French so much?
Well, I think this is the key question in trying to understand what's going on in France. And I think there are a couple of things. One of them is that it comes at a very difficult time. There is a cost of living crisis because of Russia's war in Ukraine. So prices are rising, inflation is high. And it feels like, you know, the pretty much the most difficult time to persuade the French to work longer. But I think there's something else in France. France's French sort of society has often been about, you know, improving the work-life balance, improving the quality of life and bringing down the pension age. It's difficult for the French then to accept, I think, that you reverse that. It looks like a kind of society going backwards.
There is a call among some protesters to pay for longer pensions by taxing the wealthy more. And others will say that the wealthy there have an extremely high marginal tax rate already. Who's right there?
Well, I think, you know, symbolically, it's extremely appealing right now. That would theoretically, mathematically plug the pension deficit. But, you know, what Emmanuel Macron, the French president, has been all about ever since he was elected in 2017 is trying to put an end to this very heavily taxed country that constantly tries to tax the rich, tax entrepreneurs, tax business. And I think, you know, France has changed over the last 6 years. It's become a much more business-friendly country. And I think if you were to start now taxing big companies or, you know, the wealthy in order to pay for pensions, it would be neither sustainable, but it would also send a wrong message, I think, to foreign investors about what sort of country France now is.
Sophie Petter is The Economist magazine's Paris bureau chief. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much.
In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore, and this is the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.